So, Laura, it's always, as I know from my own experience, most of the work in my field work is done by Sarah. I sit there and take some films and think of interesting ideas in the background while Sarah's doing all the genealogies and all the census work and all the photographs and so on. So I know that you've worked extensively with George, and it's very nice to hear something, first of all, about your own background and then about your field work with George.
My own background, in educationally and academically, is nothing like PhDs, but I did a degree in geography and geology at McGill University, which was interesting and I enjoyed. And
so you're Canadian?
No, I'm not. I'm Bostonian through and through.
Just went to McGill.
Well, it was after the war, and if I had gone to Radcliffe, I would have had to live at home, and I'd been to an all-girls school, and so I just decided to branch out. So, and as I say, we met in the Peabody Museum, where
How did you get to being working in the Peabody?
Well, after I had high-flown ideas of becoming a petroleum geologist or something, which never materialized. So I went to work in the Peabody Museum because of it being a family connection, and that's where I met George. And then
your grandfather was a curator.
He was an obstetrician by trade, by education. But when he retired, he'd always been an amateur archaeologist, so he took on the directorship of the museum.
At what date was he?
Oh, he died about 1936.
How long was he there?
I honestly don't know.
I'm asking because one of my great heroes was the director of the Peabody, but he was late 19th century, a man called Morse, Edward Morse.
Oh, yes, I know the name, but no, this was in the late 20s and 30s that he would have been there. Yeah. Yeah. So
you met in the secretary's office at the Peabody Museum, and how did it proceed from there?
Well, then, I don't know, just proceeded, and against a few odds, we finally got married and went on this honeymoon, paddling a canoe down the Mackenzie River, and from there on, and strangely enough, none of either of our families have a clue what we do.
Mm. Or much interest.
Not really. Mm. So.
But you were intrigued by anthropology.
Absolutely, and enjoyed every minute of it. It was.
I can't believe every minute. I mean, but many anthropologists have a few uncomfortable moments.
Oh well, yes, but yes.
Spare
me. Oh yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get on to that. Yeah, but. No, it was. It evolved very easily. Having had a child accompany us to the field made us a proper family, so that, you know, it was a great entree to have a child. Mm. And after
a 6-month-old baby in Borneo.
She was a little over 6 months by the time we got there into the field. And that particular year, I just spent acclimating her and ourselves into them. We went back. I had picked out a girl who could take care of her while I was interviewing, because I wanted to do this work with the priestesses, because they wouldn't talk to George. They wouldn't talk to George about some of the more intimate parts of family life. So it just, and I happened to pick on somebody who just was lovely and willing to answer any questions I had. And we had no tape recording equipment at that point, so I was writing some of the ceremonial language by hand.
Mm. You divided the work really on gender lines or sex lines?
Basically, yeah. But you're both always doing something in the field, whether it's writing everything down that happens. So. But the interviewing with the women and the priestesses I did. Although I did have a boy who could understand my faltering Rungus pronunciation, so who would help me, but not on the more intimate things, just on the ritual things. He was very helpful. He was very good at translating some of the more idiomatic parts of the...
Did you, at the end, George talked about his warm feelings and how much the people themselves meant to him. Did you
absolutely. I was going to show you some still pictures just to show you how well they adapt to any children, any society.
They were nice with your children.
Yeah, they were just absolutely wonderful. Mm. Especially one of our more hyperactive grandsons would sit absolutely entranced for hours watching what they were doing and listening to them play the native guitar or whatever.
Were you never afraid? Frightened?
No, I never was. There was nothing to be afraid of with them. There was always the worry about malaria and with the child especially. Mm. But
you had none of these problems of privacy or separateness or...
No. Well, we did build a separate house because there was some TB in the longhouse. And we did want to have a place to retreat to by ourselves when we...
And you were never seriously ill?
Had malaria once, had dysentery once. George had dysentery a couple of times. Wasn't very pleasant, but...
Amoebic.
And, you know, there were European doctors there. Mm. We chose a village that was fairly close to, within 5 hours by boat from the longhouse. Mm. And there were British doctors, and then there was a Danish doctor, so medicine was moderately good.
One of the advantages you had was that you weren't a trained anthropologist. You didn't have a career in the anthropological world, because that's how Sarah and I have been able to work so well together. I've noticed that you're both, I mean, there are exceptions like Catherine Marsh and Humbert, but very often, like the Strathairns and so on, anthropological couples break up very easily.
Because of disagreements over interpretations
and who's going to get the job.
Right. So no, I never had any intention of getting a job.
So you could complement each other.
Right. And so I was also able to be a housekeeper because part of the time I was doing that. But it was, everything was, this girl that babysat for us, we'd go down to the river and do the laundry together, and we'd do the laundry with other people doing their laundry, which you're just always assimilating all this other traditional things as you do that.
Some people, this is a sort of very basic thing, but some people who don't know much about anthropology or other cultures feel that when you go to a place like this, you will feel a fundamental deep difference from the people. I mean, that you will feel they are almost another species.
Oh, gosh, no.
And that you can't communicate with them emotionally and so on. Did you ever feel that?
Not at all. Because, I mean, we may have had difficulty communicating because of not knowing the language, but they never laughed, they never put us down. They would be ever so patient just teaching us whatever. Mm. And cooking and...
Their high standard, which we've also seen in the Himalayas, you know, really lovely people to whom one feels great admiration and warmth, often has the reverse effect of making your own society seem a bit subject to certain criticisms when you return.
Absolutely, yes.
And I didn't ask George this, but in reverse, what did it tell you about your own American culture and background?
Oh my goodness, I'd have to really think on that. It's people just are not as outgoing, warm towards somebody that they haven't known all their lives, or they hold nothing back. They're not an emotional people, and yet you have this feeling that there's an understanding of your feelings and...
They sound very like the Gurans, because they are very sensitive and delicate in their social relations.
Very, absolutely.
Very careful not to hurt or cause frictions or whatever. They know they've got to live together, so they're constantly gauging very well what the other person needs to know and so on.
And within their own society, they don't tolerate people who are not, you know, so that...
And that often, I've thought, is obviously shown by their treatment of children.
Yes, yes, yes.
Where they bring out their children.
Absolutely. They love children, they want big families, and they... You know, it's just unbelievable how much they love children and how they bring the children right into being part of the whole social system at a very early age. The little girls will take care of their baby sisters and brothers, and the young boys go off and help with the garden. It may be almost play to begin with, and then in the end it's really
work,
you know.
Priestesses.
Oh, yes. Well, when I say my informant, she was a priestess, and they handle the health of the community in a certain way, because if there is an illness, then they must appease the spirits, whatever you want to call them, that may have caused the illness. And they have these beautiful lines, which are in couplets. First line is more or less a everyday lexicon, and then there's a ritual counterpart. But we've discovered that quite a few of the words that come, they call it patalasan, it's the ritual counterpart, the ritual word for the everyday word, come from other groups and are morphed into this... lexicon of the ritual lexicon, and it's really quite lovely.
Later on, you presumably took a tape recorder and...
Yes, we had a tape recorder while we were in the field, but it was a hand-wound 8-inch reel-to-reel, you know, which George would record ongoing ceremonies, but nothing like this that you could just talk. And now, of course, we use this Sony, and they will do a whole ceremony into the tape recorder.
Did you ever film at all?
George did most of the filming, but still, no moving pictures.
No moving pictures.
Yeah. So.
Has film been made of them? There must have been.
Not that I know of. I mean, maybe they have these, what do they call them, cultural shows when there are meetings going on, but there may be Chinese... girls that are playing rungas, you know, and rungas instruments and stuff like that, and dressed up like some pseudo native person. But no, I think Jackie does have one of the... There's an Australian woman who married a native boy who is a musicologist. And she has, I think, done some filming, but we never did with the rungas.
Now, what are you working on at the present?
Well, just this, getting as much translation as we possibly can, but it's never going to be complete. And by interviewing on these things, then we fill in the dictionary and some of the, they call it ADAT, native customs, and...
So documenting it all.
Documenting,
Making it usable for future... people in the culture and for others.
Well, and at this point, they're wanting us to do it so that they can go back and refer to it themselves.
Could I just interject that she speaks the language very well, probably better than I do, and nothing goes into the dictionary without double-checking.
We double-check on it. He's much better getting the meanings, and I'm better. I can speak it and have it in my mind what I'm talking about, but I don't necessarily pin down the exact word, but... and of course, they now are they all know our children, grandchildren, and it makes us more and more human to them.
The children have agreed to carry on the project.
Our children have, yes.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, in fact, they each have their own sort of expertise. Laura is actually an anthropologist herself. And Amity is a does anthropology work, but she calls it environmental studies. in a different Dusunic group, she was, and then Charity loves the material culture, the art. She worked at the Peabody Museum for a year and actually made a collection of Rumi's material culture for the...
What was your first daughter called?
She's my same name as...
I was going to say, you started with a normal name and you ended up with Virtues.
Well, yes, well, we have Alara and then Amity and Charity. We wanted to name Laura Charity, and everyone made fun of it, so... when we had the third daughter, we decided to just...
Have you got grandchildren yet? Or?
Yes, we have 5 grandchildren.
And maybe they will take it on after that.
Well, I hope so. We'll just wait and see. They're all comfortable with the Rungis themselves, and in fact...
They've been there, all of them.
No, the grandchildren have not. I shouldn't say that. Amity, the middle daughter, took a child into the field for a year when she was doing her... thesis work. So, but our grandson, who's 18, he said goodbye to one of the chaps after Christmas vacation, and they do this when they are saying goodbye, which is a Malay Muslim thing. It's just politeness, and he immediately picked up on it and asked George what the meaning was. So he may.
And are you intertwined in their kinship system? In other words, have you been adopted in...
Not in the sense that anthropologists become adopted. They do call me Inai, which is the word for aunt, which is the polite way to refer to anyone that's older than you are. But Charity does have a Rungis name with the babysitter that took care of Laura at one point. She came and did a couple of summer trips with us. Just a couple of months at a time, and they call each other by this. It's the same name for each of them. They pick a word and a name, and hers is. She has one with a Barusu too, so she got into the young teenage people and really.
Is there anything else I should ask, George?
They never hesitated to answer any questions that we asked them, except for one question. That's when it had to do with headhunting and human sacrifice. But they finally acquiesced and told us about it. Very easy to work with. And the children were extremely helpful. And we learned lots from them, too. So, all in all, they're a lovely, beautiful people. And
well, that's a lovely note to end on.